The theater of the mind.
Hello. My name is Dr. Mercurio Arborea, and I am the founder of the Arborea Institute. Through our unique blend of benign pharmacology, sensory therapy, and energy sculpting, we can guide you to a new, better, happier you. You are about to embark on a great journey. Let the new age of enlightenment begin.
What is at stake is more than one small country. It is a big idea, a new world order.
It's no longer a theory. What I'm about to say is fact. The secret organizations of the world power elite are no longer secret. They have planned and are now leading us into a one-world communist government.
Welcome, useless eaters, to the Odd Man Out podcast, where we talk about hidden history, depolitical policy, occult deconstruction, economics, religion, and philosophy. I'm your rabbit hole aficionado, the Odd Man. Welcome.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order.
Public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite.
And when that first cocaine was smuggled in on a ship, it may as well have been a deadly bacteria so much as it hurt the body, the soul of our country. But take my word for it, this scourge will stop.
So the House voted to ban TikTok. And there's some interesting things happening surrounding that. And I want to say that I'm a little bit disappointed in the No Agenda guys for just brushing this off as, oh, it's so stupid to act like those we don't speak of would have anything to do with the TikTok ban. We have the Jewish Federations of North America, a very powerful and influential group here, and they had a post just the other day on X saying, we want Congress to tell TikTok that their time is up. We're done with the lies the platform spreads about the Jewish people and Israel. Take action now. And it's got a link that you can click and sign up, and I'm sure there's a donate button somewhere. And there's an obvious push by both the left and the right to get rid of TikTok. I think I mentioned the other day Heritage has been one of these groups that's pushed against TikTok, but you've got liberal groups as well. And I think that there is something going on, and we don't have to look that deeply at it. A few days ago, you had President Trump's Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, talking about buying TikTok. So he's putting together a group to buy TikTok. Yes, yes, he is. And he wouldn't say who. Well, Steve Mnuchin is an interesting guy. You know, he was Trump's Treasury Secretary. He was a former Soros agent, a former Citibank guy, a Council on Foreign Relations member, and a Skull and Bonesman, no doubt. And of course, if I left it out, a member of those we don't speak of. Now, I would not be surprised if one of his partners in this venture ends up being Stephen A. Schwarzman of Blackstone, because he was also appointed by Trump, also a CFR member, also a Skull and Bonesman, as well as a member of those we don't speak of. Now, I could be totally off the mark here with that, but just the thought I had, because there's a lot of similarities there. I wanted to look a little bit at Steve Mnuchin. I mean, he comes off like a nice guy. He's personable and all that good stuff, but that means nothing when we're talking about politics. So let's look a little bit deeper at Mr. Steve Mnuchin. But first, why don't we go ahead and listen to what he said about possibly buying TikTok?
Well, you know, when I was Treasury Secretary, I chaired CFIUS, and CFIUS approved, and I had President Trump sign an order that TikTok had to be sold. And I continue to believe that. So I think the legislation should pass. And I think it should be sold. I understand the technology. It's a great business, and I'm going to put together a group to buy TikTok.
You're trying to buy TikTok?
I am, because this should be owned by U.S. businesses. There's no way that the Chinese would ever let a U.S. company own something like this in China.
Have you already put a group together?
No, I'm working
You're
on it.
You're exploring a group.
I've spoken to a bunch of people, but...
Who would be part of your group?
I can't tell that to you now, but
it would be
a combination of investors, so there would be no one investor that controlled this. And the issue is all about the technology. This needs to be controlled by U.S.
Let me ask you a very practical.
Now, this is from 2021. It says that Israeli spy chief in talks to join Mnuchin's investment fund by Jonathan Swan and Barak Ravid. The boss of Israel's spy agency has been in private talks with former Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin about joining his investment fund that will work with Gulf countries, two sources familiar with the conversations tell Axios. Why it matters. Yossi Cohen, director of the Mossad, is retiring next week, but the discussions between him and Mnuchin occurred while he was still serving in his government role, which also included handling Israel's ties with Gulf countries such as Qatar and Saudi Arabia. Cohen and a representative for Mnuchin declined to comment when Axios approached them about these discussions. A source who spoke to Cohen said no final decision has been made about him joining Mnuchin's fund. State of play. Mnuchin's fund is expected to raise money from sovereign wealth funds in the Persian Gulf region. Funds for Qatar and the United Arab Emirates are evaluating cooperation with Mnuchin, according to sources familiar with the deliberations. Here yet is another one of Trump's appointees, another Zionist Organization of America darling, a guy that's been palling around with Mike Pompeo, another one of Trump's appointees who is a hardcore Zionist, AIPAC, Kufi favorite. Let's see here. Former U.S. Ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, also has discussed joining Mnuchin's fund. Friedman worked with Cohen during the Trump presidency on many issues, including Israel's relations with Gulf countries. They resulted in a series of direct normalization agreements between Israel and several Arab countries known collectively as the Abraham Accords. Both Mnuchin and Cohen worked closely with Qatar, the UAE, and other Gulf states as part of their government jobs and traveled to the region several times. The Mossad has been working closely with Qatar in recent years on the issue of Gaza. This work continued during the recent crisis, with the Israeli spy agency passing messages to Hamas via Qatar. Israel has approved and sometimes requested Qatari transfers of hundreds of millions of dollars to Hamas-controlled Gaza. This has given Qatar sizable diplomatic influence. Yeah, we won't read anymore, but it's just amazing, you know, when you start making these connections. Let's see if I can find out anything else interesting here. This is Mnuchin's private equity fund raises $2.5 billion. The former Treasury Secretary has attracted investment from Saudi Arabia's Sovereign Wealth Fund. This is by Alan Rappaport. We'll skip down here a little bit. A former Goldman Sachs banker, that is Mnuchin, film investor and hedge fund manager. Mr. Mnuchin is now leveraging the experience and contacts that he developed at the Treasury to continue to build his wealth. When he assumed the Treasury role in 2017, his net worth was estimated at $400 million. The scale of Mr. Mnuchin's fund and its investments from countries where he traveled as Treasury Secretary have raised questions about whether he used his government role to enrich himself. Of course he did. They all do. These people are pieces of crap. Nothing much interesting in this one, just kind of the same old same. But I wanted to kind of give you a little bit more information on Steve Mnuchin. This is an article from the Israeli newspaper Haaretz. Trump's people pocket Saudi billions. What about top Israeli officials? A report that Saudi Arabia put $2 billion into Jared Kushner's investment fund, despite objections he was too inexperienced, raises a big question. Does the deal have an Israeli angle, And could former Mossad head Yossi Cohen be involved? This is from April 19, 2022, Etienne Avarel. Last week, the NYT disclosed some news that did not get the media exposure it should have in Israel. According to internal documents obtained by the paper from the Public Investment Fund, Saudi Arabia's sovereign wealth fund, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman put $2 billion into a new investment fund called Infinity Partners, belonging to Jared Kushner, former U.S. President Donald Trump's son-in-law. Okay, so this is behind a paywall, and I can't see the part about Mnuchin. I apologize. But I did see this, and this actually goes along with this. This is from the Times of Israel in 2016. Treasury pick Steven Mnuchin was mentored by two of Trump's global villains. The JTA, like the post-credits bonus scene in a Marvel superhero movie, Donald Trump's final pre-election ad added three surprising villains to his usual rogues gallery: Hillary and Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, assorted foreigners, Lloyd Blankfein, George Soros, and Janet Yellen. All three deal with money. Blankfein as CEO of Goldman Sachs Investment, Soros as leading hedge funder, and Yellen as chairwoman of the Federal Reserve. All three are Jewish. That's what it says in the article. And now Blankfein and Soros have this in common. They both once employed Steve Mnuchin, the man who would be President Trump's Treasury Secretary and who is also Jewish. Mnuchin, who confirmed Wednesday he was Trump's Treasury pick, reported to Blankfein in the 1990s when Blankfein helmed Goldman Sachs' fixed income division. Blankfein told the Washington Post that Mnuchin was a very smart guy. He knew him, but they haven't stayed in touch over the years. After leaving Goldman Sachs in 2022, Mnuchin spent a brief period working for Soros, who then helped him set up Duke Capital Management. Mnuchin was one of the early establishment Republican donors who backed Trump and was the finance chairman for the campaign. You know, you think about it, okay? Of course, we've mentioned Kushner. You've got Wilbur Ross, a Rothschild agent of 30 years. Jason Greenblatt. Oh, there's four or five more members of those we don't speak of in the Trump administration. But this is really kind of interesting because we talk about how Trump took the money from Soros, you know, for Trump Towers. Well, nobody talks about that anymore, and that's fine. But I saw in an article the other day that Trump has been hanging out on the campaign trail with another former Soros guy. Let me see if I can find this here. This was a couple of weeks ago. Didn't hear much about it. Okay, this is actually a little bit older than I thought. This is from Feb 9th of this year. Donald Trump is fundraising with George Soros' protege. This is by Roger Schallenberger. Few Republican tropes are as overused as the George Soros boogeyman. When it comes to right-wing conspiracies, the Hungarian-born Jewish billionaire and philanthropist is the tried-and-true secret ingredient to give any conspiracy theory legs, no matter how absurd. Now, that does have legs, of course, because he finances all these NGOs, which are really getting the job done. And even the Republican conservatives who complain about George Soros most of the time don't get deeply into what he really does. I think I've mentioned even the Palumbo book. It's good. It's got some good stuff in it, but it doesn't go extremely deep. Now, the book, I think it's by Mike Howard about the open societies. It is fantastic and goes extremely deep, and I highly recommend it. Let's see here. What else does this say? It says, he's like the dude's rug in The Big Lebowski, really tying the room together. Just add Soros backed and watch it all magically and anti-Semitically come together. Of course, because everything is racist. While Soros-backed conspiracy theories are most dangerous because of their anti-Semitism, they also all share a common construction that the mere involvement of Soros, even several degrees removed from the issue at hand, is enough to make any matter entirely legitimate. Trump himself has regularly invoked Soros as a boogeyman. But it turns out that Trump, along with a slew of Republican officials and groups, is by his own definition also Soros-backed. And unlike those right-wing conspiracy theories, this one isn't even a stretch. This month, Trump will attend a South Carolina fundraiser co-hosted by the man who literally ran the Soros Fund Management for years, a man who has been described as a Soros protege, who amassed billions of dollars for the Soros empire, and who left in 2015 to launch his own investment fund with $2 billion in founding money from none other than George Soros. That fundraiser's name is Scott Bessent. That's B-E-S-S-E-N-T. For years, Bessent played a central role in building the fortune that has fueled Soros' political and charitable funding, which, to be sure, has been one of the most influential forces underwriting Democratic politics and liberal policymaking over the last decade, if not the most influential. But Bessent himself has funneled millions of Soros-sourced dollars into politics. Federal Election Commission data shows and has demonstrated an increasingly conservative bent over time. He's contributed $2.7 million to federal political campaigns and committees since 1995, with nearly all of it coming after Trump declared his candidacy in June 2015. Now, obviously, this won't mean hardly anything to people if they love Trump. I just go back to Carol Quigley talking about how the elites control both sides, and that's sure as hell what this sounds like to me. While some of that money has gone to Democratic candidates, including former President Barack Obama, $2,300, and $25,000 for a Hillary Clinton-aligned PAC in 2013, his donations have overwhelmingly supported Republicans. A list of Soros-backed GOP officials includes a number of prominent sitting senators, including J.D. Vance of Ohio, Rick Scott of Florida, Mike Lee of Utah, Marco Rubio of Florida, Ted Cruz of Texas, Ted Budd of North Carolina, John Kennedy of Louisiana, Chuck Grassley of Iowa, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, and Mitch McConnell of Kentucky. Bessent has also given $176,500 to the GOP Congressional Reelection Committee, as well as to former House Speaker John Boehner, with another $175,000 to its senatorial counterpart over the last 2 years. Vance, Scott, Lee, Rubio, Cruz, Budd, Kennedy, Grassley, Graham, and McConnell have all politically attacked Soros after the 2020 election. Budd falsely suggested to Trump's then-chief of staff Mark Meadows that Dominion voting machines may have Soros ties. 1 year later, the Charlotte Observer reported that Soros was a top investor in the Budd family business. The largest single Bessent beneficiary was Trump, however, with a flat $1 million charitable donation to the former president's 2017 inauguration fund. The largest political recipient has been the Republican National Committee, which Bessent has given $928,000 to since Trump was inaugurated. Bessent's 2017 RNC donations list his employer as Soros Fund Management. Yeah, you won't hear this on most alt-media shows. But Bessent only made his first contribution to Trump's campaign last September. Oh, we got the bill again. A $3,300 maximum gift for the primary. FEC records show. He has also funded some of Trump's primary opponents, including max outs to the failed presidential bids for both Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and Tim Scott, along with a cool $325,000 to Nikki Haley's political nonprofit, Politico reported. DeSantis has repeatedly railed against Soros while being suspected of acting as a Soros plant. Tim Scott, it turns out, will also be at the South Carolina fundraiser alongside Trump. The event, which was first reported by Puck News, is slated for February 20th. In addition to Trump himself, the event features prominent MAGA allies like South Carolina Governor Henry McMaster, casino dealer Wallace Sheaves, Notre Dame football coaching legend Lou Holtz, and Senators Scott and Lindsey Graham. Graham, who has previously invoked Soros to defend Trump, has received more than $19,000 from Beeson since 2015. Scott, meanwhile, has clocked about $15,000. The Daily Beast sent comment requests to Beeson and the Trump campaign spokesperson, but they did not immediately reply. Beeson first entered Soros' world in 1991. That's a long-time agent. He came aboard the European Fund. He stayed there for 9 years, working his way up to managing director, later boasting that he'd achieved a compound annual return of 30% in Europe on a capital base of $1 billion to $2 billion. Crane's New York Business Review later honored him as one of the longest-running members of one of the most successful hedge fund groups of all time. When Soros shut down his Europe branch in 2000, he put Beeson in charge of $300 million, roughly a third of the assets in the Central Soros Fund. Beeson struck out on his own, but he returned to the fold in 2011 to serve as chief investment officer of the main operation, Soros Fund Management, where Soros entrusted him with a $25 billion portfolio. Bloomberg later reported that Beeson had earned the Soros family $10 billion in profits, or about 13% in annualized returns. It was national news when Beeson left the Soros Fund in the summer of 2015 to start his own hedge fund, Key Square Group, with a cush of a $2 billion investment loan from his old boss. In an internal memo at the time, Soros' son Robert Soros told employees that Beeson will continue to advise SFM on an informal basis, assuring them that Beeson remains close to George Soros and the Soros family. I mean, this just goes on and on, but I'm telling you, got to always follow the money. It's just not something to say. You always do it because this is all these people care about in the end. By 2018, Beeson had paid Soros back some of that $2 billion loan, Bloomberg reported. But by the end of 2017, Soros himself still had $853 million stashed in a managed account at Beeson's Key Square Group, according to Bloomberg. If Beeson had any compunctions about the epithets that his political allies have hurled at his former boss and close friend, that hasn't stopped him from publicly advocating for Trump. Just last week, Beeson said that he's bullish on a Trump rally in the markets, if investors believe Trump will win in 2024. The markets have hit all-time highs during President Joe Biden's term, including in recent weeks. In 2021, he launched an independent publishing company called All Seasons Press, premised on boosting Trump world and Trump-adjacent figures. In November, conservative Jewish outlet Tablet published a long-form piece looking into the publication, citing a funny habit of signing big-name MAGA authors to book contracts and then using them. So this is just part and parcel, I think, for what really happens behind the scenes if we knew a lot more about it. These people, these powerful people with the money, they fund both sides. And I think we've got a bunch of actors on our hands instead of politicians. You know, after all, if you've been in business for a long time, you have to sell yourself. You have to know it's the art of the deal after all, right? And they do say that Washington is Hollywood for ugly people. So I wonder if there's more connections like this regarding Trump. But I think we need to start looking at all these other people as well. All these people they mentioned, all those politicians, I believe, are hardcore Zionists. And they most likely support this Gaza genocide. No matter what they say about Soros being a Nazi or whatever, it's absolutely not true. He's not the most religious person, for sure. But I read an article recently about his son, Alex. And Alex was saying in there, now Alex is the heir to the throne. I think it's official. Alex is saying that, yeah, his dad based his philanthropy on his religion, on his faith, on the Jewish culture. And Alex is religious, and he's started his own Jewish-based philanthropic organization. And of course, they've got numerous NGOs. And these people have so much money, it's tough to even track down whom all they are funding. But all this stuff is connected, man. And most people are not going to tell you about that. And I have to hand it to the Daily Beast, because you won't get that from any conservative outlet. But conservatives, you know, it's just this Biden sucks. The Democrats are horrible. They're out to get Trump. And, you know, of course, the left-wing media, most of the rest of the left-wing media is just the opposite. And even though they accuse Trump of being anti-Semitic in there, which is ridiculous, because how do you do that when he's appointing all these Jews? It was a good piece that told things that we would not have known otherwise. So that's why you got to check out both sides sometimes. And you've got to read these articles for yourself if you really want to find out about things. And then you can judge instead of just automatically seeing, oh, that's from a liberal organization or that's from a conservative organization. Now, there are some that you know are just going to be total BS. Like most of the time, Breitbart is so fully loaded with partisan bullcrap. And MRC TV and Newsbusters and some of the others. And on the left, you know, the Daily Kos and Talking Points Memo and Alternet. I think Alternet's dead now, but those kinds. You know you're getting this hardcore spin, and you can see it usually in the first paragraph or two. But if you look around, you can find some really interesting information. And one last thing I want to say, I did mention that Steve Mnuchin was a Skull and Bones member. You know, you don't hear a lot about Skull and Bones members these days. And I think they're real secretive now, or even more secretive than they used to be about the membership. Because you remember how it used to be before Sutton's book, nobody knew much of anything about the Skull and Bones order, the Order of Death. And I imagine after the word got out that Kerry and George W. Bush and then George H.W. Bush and their father, Prescott Bush, were all Skull and Bones men, that they probably decided, hey, we've got to keep this under wraps like never before. Or they finally moved on to some other organization and they're putting the power players in that organization. Anyway, Mnuchin is one of the younger ones, and he's not a young guy by any stretch of the imagination. And so since he has openly, publicly said that he wants to buy TikTok, and all these people are saying, oh no, it has nothing to do with Israel and the Gaza situation, and Israel doesn't want to censor TikTok. Bull crap. The intelligence agencies, of course, want to censor any kind of platform that makes it easier for people to instantly communicate and get videos and information out there that people normally wouldn't otherwise know and see. So I think you just got to put two and two together. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, a lot of these conservative pundits and podcasters, I mean, it may be that they would like to expose some of this stuff, but they want to make money. And so they just don't go there. And I understand, you know, I have friends who work for certain platforms and they can't really talk about all this stuff if they want to keep their job and it's their livelihood. So I totally understand that. But, you know, a lot of these guys, they could tell the truth, the full truth, and just won't. So it's pretty obvious they're trying to hide things for a reason. Anyway, so I was watching a video by the Cancel This Clothing Company guy on IG, and I think he's on TikTok as well. He's doing a great job on some things. And he pointed out that the rep who had presented the TikTok ban bill was Mike Gallagher. And he showed that in 2024, this last election cycle, Mike Gallagher had received some $17,000, maybe a little bit more, from AIPAC. Palantir and Google was his number one and two donors. And then he showed the 2022 election cycle, and AIPAC was his number one donor at $44,000, which is quite a bit. Well, I noticed third donor in the 2022 cycle was Blackstone Group. And we've mentioned Blackstone Group in this episode and many others. Blackstone Group, founded by Stephen A. Schwarzman. It was a subsidiary of BlackRock. Blackstone is famous for buying up rental properties, for one. Stephen A. Schwarzman, as we mentioned, is a Skull and Bones member, a Council on Foreign Relations member, and a member of Those We Don't Speak Of. So isn't it interesting how when you connect the dots, they always kind of seem to lead to the same place like 85-90% of the time. And here we have one of the usual suspects who's also a member of Those We Don't Speak Of, connected to various groups like Convention of States. Mark Levin, the talk show host, he had a tweet March 18th that said, "Stop the bullshit about TikTok. It's a mess of communist Chinese operations spying on us and gathering data on us. The fact that certain Americans have gotten filthy rich from working with them and hire lobbyists and buy off politicians and activists is no reason for we, the people, to put up with this crap." You know, he's one to be talking because he's being paid by various organizations. And if you really want to get into all the communist fear-mongering, let's talk about who the original Bolsheviks and communists were, or at least some of the most powerful ones. But anyway, that's beside the point right now. It's obvious that they're trying to shut down TikTok because they don't want certain information getting out. It's probably a threat to Those We Don't Speak Of and what they're doing in Gaza, as well as what the American government is doing to its people. And they're probably all aligned anyway. And so you can see how an unregulated or much less regulated platform would be a threat to the power base. I'm going to change directions here in a minute, but I wanted to mention that this Jewish Federations of North America, I started looking into that because they are the main group that came out in favor of banning TikTok. And of course, the ADL has a post now and on their website that says that if you say it's a Jewish conspiracy or you say that it's an Israeli push to ban TikTok, that is also anti-Semitic, of course. But this Jewish Federations of North America is a very well-funded, well-organized group that's connected to multiple other NGOs. It's just a part of this whole Zionist network that, you know, they're tax-exempt foundations, they know exactly how to do it, and they all have the same goals, which is to enrich Israel, to work behind the scenes, to make Israel and Israelis and Jews more powerful, and not everyday Jews by any means, but the people who are power-seeking and hungry and want to control people and want to change the direction of the country and the other countries that they want to subvert and infiltrate. So we need to think about that. And we'll move on to another topic here, which is I want to get into this whole idea about Trump being an anti-globalist. The more I look, the more that time goes on, the more I understand that this is not the case. Now, I know I talk about Trump all the time and people get tired of it. And if you're pro-Trump, you hate this show, I'm sure, and you can't tolerate it. But I think even worse than the left is the right, who pretends to be on our side because, as I've said, and you guys know this many, many times, we get destroyed from within faster than from without because we're paying attention to the opposition and not paying attention to what our guys are doing. They're constantly keeping us distracted and angry, and this is all a part of the global plan. Started looking at the Council on Foreign Relations members in the Trump administration, and I did that early on, but there's been many more than I even thought. You know, I've done that with the Obama administration, with the George W. Bush administration, and with the Biden administration. Well, I found, thanks to Chuck Baldwin and others, there's just a few of us who are pointing this out. Trump appointed 42 Council on Foreign Relations members. Now, there may have been a couple more that we missed out, but this is confirmed. I've checked it thrice, and it's absolutely true. Now, we talked about the council on the last episode, but for any of you that didn't hear that and are not familiar, you know, Hillary calls it the mothership. And it's been around for over 100 years. It was created out of the wills of diamond mogul Cecil Rhodes, who was funded by the crown and funded by the Rothschilds to go over to South Africa and mine the diamonds and the gold. He became very wealthy. He created this series of wills to leave his fortunes to. While he was alive, he had an organization of elites, including the Rothschilds and some prominent lords of his time there in Britain, and they were called the Society of the Elect, and they had lesser emissaries called the Association of Helpers. Now, Cecil knew that he was going to die young, and so he made these specific wills. They had directions in there to create a secret society to go to forming a world government, taking over America and the rest of the world for Britain, because Britain had been such a powerful, powerful government and powerful people at one time, as we all know. Now, these wills created the Rhodes Trust, and there's about five or six organizations at least who fall under the Rhodes Trust. But out of these wills also came the Pilgrim Society. We've talked about that many times on the show with Charles Savoy, but also created the Chatham House, or it was originally the Royal Institute of International Affairs. Now, that is the counterpart to the Council on Foreign Relations. It's the British counterpart. It was formed the year before, and the council was formed in 1921 and celebrated their 100th anniversary during the height of COVID. We also had UN Agenda 21, and the council very much formed and created the United Nations, or its members did anyway. We can talk about Council on Foreign Relations offshoots like the Trilateral Commission, perhaps Bilderberg and others, maybe even Bohemian Grove, because many council members have been at Bohemian Grove. Now, researcher Anthony C. Sutton said there are circles within circles in the council, and not every member knows what the end goal is. But certainly, they are the preeminent globalist organization, another tax-exempt organization, who gets its members into every presidential administration. Nearly every CIA chief has been a council member. Members in media, government, business, academia, and even entertainment. And so everyone knows, if you have studied foreign policy, that the council is probably the most influential group in the history of America as far as foreign policy goes. But even domestic policy, many of their people write policies that end up being put into place. So you think about Trump being this big anti-globalist who had a record number of Council on Foreign Relations members in his administration. Now, we've talked about in the past that he had over 30 George W. Bush administrators in his administration, and he was very clear about how he did not like that administration. Now, not only that, but I learned recently, because you didn't hear much about it with all the things that were going on, but, you know, we've been talking about Bilderberg for years in the conspiracy community. Well, I didn't know that Trump had actually sent people to Bilderberg. In 2017, he sent H.R. McMaster, Council on Foreign Relations member, Wilbur Ross, also Council on Foreign Relations member, Chris Liddell, I'm not sure if he's CFR or not, and Nadia Shadlow, who is indeed CFR. And in 2019, he sent his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and former CIA chief Mike Pompeo. Now, Shadlow is those we don't speak of. Kushner, of course, is as well. And then Mike Pompeo is one of the biggest Zionists in the entire world. And so is Wilbur Ross, who went in 2017. As you know, he was a 25 or 30-year Rothschild's banking agent who gave Trump a loan for his failed casino business. So there you have more globalists in regards to the Bilderberg group. Now, another Trump administrator came to my attention, and that is a guy named Rob Porter. Now, Rob was a Rhodes Scholar. The Rhodes Scholars, many know, was created out of the Rhodes Trust, and people like Bill Clinton, Cory Booker, Pete Buttigieg, who else? Rachel Maddow, Strobe Talbot. These people were also Rhodes Scholars, and it was one of the things that Cecil Rhodes said in his wills. He wanted to create young people kind of in their formative years to mold their minds basically into being agents for this quest to form a world government. So we have this guy, Rob Porter, in the Trump administration, and he had a very important role. He was the one who was in charge of all the papers that came across President Trump's desk. So there you have all the Council on Foreign Relations members. We mentioned 42 that we know of. And then you have Rob Porter, a Rhodes Scholar. And then we mentioned Trump sending people to the Bilderberg conferences. And I think just on a basic level, Bilderberg and Bohemian Grove, Skull and Bones, these types of things are very important because think about it. All these very important high-level people go to these meetings, go to Bohemian Grove, or members of the Skull and Bones, and the media will barely even touch it. As far as I can tell, there's no other high-level conference like Bilderberg that would have royalty, high-level media people, and high-level government people, as well as CEOs and people who are as high up as you can get in finance and business, attending all the same meetings, and the media barely even cover it. I mean, look what they sensationalize on a weekly, nearly daily basis, much less important things. So right there's your conspiracy. The media has to be told to back off Bilderberg. There's no question about it. They have to be told to back off of Bohemian Grove, and it's just silly to think otherwise. But I just wanted to point out that we are led to believe Trump is this big-time anti-globalist. You know, also, we know that Trump appointed Aurelia Skipwith, who was former Monsanto. He appointed Woody Johnson, who was, of course, Johnson & Johnson. He appointed Citibank's Mnuchin, Mark T. Esper, Elliot Abrams. Jared Kushner had deals with Soros in his cadre business. So you really have to understand, once you start to follow the money and look a little bit farther past the headlines, that we're not being told the full truth. And even people that used to point out all these different globalist organizations, people that we've mentioned like Alex Newman, but going back even farther, Alex Jones. I mean, how can Alex Jones, who's talked about the Council on Foreign Relations and Skull and Bones and Bilderberg, ignore the fact that Trump had all those people, those CFR people, Skull and Bones people, in his administration and sent people to Bilderberg? Now, maybe he's mentioned it. I don't know because I don't listen to him anymore. But how could you go on to support Trump like he has? Now, I know he's coming out kind of against him now as far as Operation Warp Speed and the vaccines go, and now he's pushing back against the Zionists because there's just so many people who've been killed. No rational person can deny what Israel's doing any longer. And I don't know if there is ulterior motives behind Alex and some of the right-leaning people coming out against Israel recently. People like, well, even the Hodge twins. And I've heard Tucker Carlson's even said some things about Israel. I know, of course, that Candace Owens is the big name, the big controversy, being fired supposedly from the Daily Wire. You know, I think it's good. I think that a lot more people are waking up. But I wonder what it's all going to lead to. Because even Theodore Herzl, the father of Zionism, talked about how they ought to use the anti-Semites in their favor. Now, I don't think any of those people I mentioned are anti-Semitic in any way, but you can't hardly criticize anything Israel does or anybody linked to Israel without being called that. So I wonder if they've figured out a way to use this whole situation with Candace Owens in their favor. I wouldn't be surprised at all. Permanent victim status is priceless. PVS. So I guess only time will tell. It's hard to predict these things, but I think we've got to be brave enough to point out to these people who think that Trump was the ultimate anti-globalist that this was just not the case. You know, he approved the Bayer-Monsanto merger, and they even, the Trump administration, pushed to not have warning labels on Monsanto products about it causing cancer. I think you start to connect all these dots and you start to see the bigger picture, and that's what the media doesn't want you to see, as well as a lot of alt media. A lot of alt media, as we've mentioned here recently, they have ulterior motives. And it's not just that, but also, if you are willing to tell the truth about both sides, you're not going to make a lot of money, because the people are so dumbed down, they either lean left or right, and they don't understand that, like Carol Quigley talked about, it's kind of the same powerful organizations and people behind the scenes controlling both sides. So the people aren't savvy enough to realize that, the majority of people. And so there's not a lot of money or success in being willing to critique both sides. And so I think that's why a lot of people on the right stick to one side. And that's the only thing I can understand, besides the things that we've talked about previously about keeping your job and whatnot. So I think it's important to talk about all of this stuff, keep our minds open, and don't be so trusting with media and with these figures in the spotlight, and even, like I said, alt media. Question what they're doing, what they're saying, who they're loyal to, who pays them, and what kind of connections they have, and go from there. Use your best judgment, because things are getting harder and harder to figure out. The lines are becoming even more blurred, and I think it's only going to get worse in the coming future. And so with that, I'd like to leave you with the Carol Quigley comment about both sides being controlled. The argument that the two parties should represent opposed ideas and policies, one perhaps of the right and the other of the left, is a foolish idea acceptable only to doctrinaire and academic thinkers. Instead, the two parties should be almost identical, so that the American people can throw the rascals out in any election without leading to any profound or extensive shifts in policy. Then it should be possible to replace it, every 4 years if necessary, by the other party, which will be none of those things, but will still pursue with new vigor approximately the same basic policies. All right, guys, it's that time. I want to thank my supporters. Thank you to the patrons who help produce this show. And if you want to become a producer, a supporter of The Odd Man Out, just go to patreon.com/The Odd Man Out. I like to thank my patrons individually, and I want to thank Anthony, first of all, who's a longtime friend. Thank you, Dredd. Thank you, Cole. Thank you, Ashley. Thank you to that crazy bread man for being a covert co-conspirator. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Ruckus, from alternatecurrentradio.com, as well as TNT Radio. Thank you for being a producer of the show, Ruckus, and you can find him all over either one of those sites. Thank you, No Evil Shall I Fear. Thank you, James. Thank you, Bill, for being a producer of the show. Thank you to the Mighty Kilowatt. And thank you to Sir Tim of the Tunnels. Now, I want to also thank alternatecurrentradio.com for being my podcasting family and hosting the show. Get on over there and check out their flagship show, The Boiler Room. They have many other great talk and music shows as well. And also, I'd like to thank fringeradionetwork.com for also posting my show. Cheers and blessings, guys. And remember, their order is not our order. See ya.
I also want to point out that we have a major, major, major generational problem. All the polling I've seen, ADL's polling, ICC's polling, independent polling, suggests this is not a left-right gap, folks. The issue in the United States of support for Israel is not left and right. It is young and old. And the numbers of young people who think that Hamas's, massacre was justified is shockingly and terrifyingly high. And so we really have a TikTok problem, a Gen Z problem, that our community needs to put the same brains that gave us Taglit, the same brains that gave us all these other amazing innovations, need to put our energy toward this, fast. Because again, we've been chasing this left-right divide. It's the wrong game. The real game is the next generation. And the Hamas and their accomplices, the useful idiots in the West.
We really do need to ban TikTok once and for all. And let me tell you why. For every 30 minutes that someone watches TikTok, every day, they become 17% more anti-Semitic, more pro-Hamas based on doing that.
With My Israel, has arranged an instruction day for wiki editors. The goal of the day is to teach people how to edit in Wikipedia, which is the number one source of information today in the world. As a way of example, if someone searches the Gaza flotilla, we want to be there. We want to be the guys who influence what is written there, how it's written, and to ensure that it's balanced and Zionist in nature.
The system covers the entire internet right now, two social networks, Facebook and Twitter, and it covers all the posts, all the tweets. Of them, it identifies every day 200,000 suspect posts and tweets that are suspected for anti-Semitism. Then it analyzes them using artificial intelligence and machine learning, and ultimately identifies roughly 10,000 anti-Semitic posts a day. As of now and forward, this information is going to be made public. It in itself will be a great deterrent to anti-Semitism. Suddenly we'll know which city is the most anti-Semite city in terms of internet activity. We'll know who are the 10 top anti-Semitic tweets and Twitters. We'll know on a certain day we see a spike in anti-Semitism, we'll be able to drill down and understand what caused it. Just by the fact of knowing all of this, it in itself, hopefully, will shame people into acting better.